Welcome to the Tinnelly Talks podcast, where we dive into the common legal issues facing today's community associations. Whether you're a manager, board member, or homeowner, you're sure to pick up on some nuggets of advice to help you build a successful community in this ever-evolving and changing world.
Hello, and welcome to Tinnelly Talks. I'm Ramona Acosta.
And I'm Steve Tinnelly.
And today we're talking about neighbor-to-neighbor disputes with Tracy Blankenship. Tracy is a president of Excel Property Management in Laguna Hills and has managed communities for more than 20 years. She started her community association career as a part-time assistant and rose through the ranks supporting new large-scale master plan developments in communities, including condominiums, single-family homes, and mixed-use properties. She later led regional office teams throughout California and served as an on-site general manager. Hi, Tracy. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
So today we're going to talk about neighbor-to-neighbor disputes. You have a long career in this industry. Have you ever run across a couple of neighbors that couldn't seem to get along?
Well, I would like to say never, but it happens almost daily, which is super sad to say. We get a lot of complaints from people about their neighbors.
And so how do you typically handle that type of situation?
So you really have to ask questions, investigate, and dig a little deeper than just taking someone's complaint at face value.
Okay, so like what? What's typical of a neighbor-to-neighbor dispute that you would get?
We get a lot of dog barking, noisy complaints, people who are parking where they shouldn't be parking. A big one these days is smoking, in particular marijuana smoke.
Mm-hmm. So, Steve, is the association obligated to get involved every time a neighbor complains about another neighbor?
Well, I know some members might think that, right? The challenge that we have as council, and I know you deal with it, Tracy, is that we've got these CC&Rs that have this nuisance provision that basically uses fancy legal terms to say anything that bugs or noisy or whatever constitutes a nuisance and it's prohibited. So these neighbor-to-neighbor disputes, these individuals that don't like each other, they will call you, Tracy, or someone on your management team and say, pursuant to section whatever of our CC&Rs that prohibits nuisances, you must sue my neighbor because he leaves his trash cans out a day too long, or because he has a chihuahua that barks too much, or so on and so forth. And that's always a tough thing because the boards come to us and a lot of times they'll say, hey, what do we have to do here? Do we have to get involved? This is kind of a neighbor-to-neighbor issue. I know we have a duty to enforce the governing documents, and it's tough. It's tough. In most instances, it's kind of a teachable moment, right, an educating moment for our clients when we say, okay, listen, understand what a homeowners association is, what it's meant to do, what it's not meant to do, right? It's not meant to make neighbors like each other, right? It's here to maintain common areas, keep the streets paved, keep the parks maintained, and so on and so forth. Regardless of how well the association does that, you're going to have people that live next door to each other that just don't like each other. And what we see, and I'm sure you see this too, is that when they don't have that good relationship with each other, a lot of times they'll look to management, right, or to the association's board of directors to say, hey, I don't like my neighbor, and I want you to go after my neighbor, Tom. He's a big jerk because Tom is committing nuisances, and I bought into this community, and there's a nuisance provision. And you have to do something about that, right? You ever hear that line of argument?
Right. That comes up a lot. However, what I like to explain to the homeowners is there is a nuisance provision. There's no personality provision, which means we can't avoid disputes of personality, or we can't get involved in personal matters. It's easy when we can substantiate it. Say a car is parked in a space it shouldn't be, or I can drive out to the community and hear a dog barking. However, I can't tell if it's just you maybe not liking your neighbor and you just don't like their hair color or the car they drive or the way their children play. So a lot of that is based on personal feeling.
Absolutely.
That's where it gets hard.
A personal feeling. I bought into this community and I thought I would not have to listen to children having fun in their own backyard playing and enjoying themselves, right? So I can't sleep at night. My property value is being diminished because I hear these kids at 6 o'clock at night with friends over having fun in their pool. I'm sure you hear that too.
We hear that as well. And it's interesting to me that there is a divide between the folks who love to live in the community and want every rule and regulation enforced. And then they're the anarchists who don't want anything enforced. And they want to be able to have free reign of every space, cause noise, park wherever they want, create smells, and not care about their neighbors. So a lot of it is personality.
Absolutely, it's personality. Well, the frustrating thing is, like, this nuisance provision is so broadly worded, and sometimes we have to educate our clients. What's a nuisance, right? What might be a nuisance to somebody is not a nuisance to another person. How do you make that decision? Right? That term, I think, is thrown around a ton.
And nuisance is based on tolerance.
Exactly.
And individuality.
Absolutely. So I have a neighbor on one side of me that might, you know, I got my Traeger smoker going off, making some ribs on a Sunday. Oh, that smells fantastic, Steve. That is the most amazing thing. When can I have some? And then a neighbor on the other side saying, oh, that's a carcinogen. You better stop smoking those ribs, and so on and so forth, right? It's a matter of personal view, right? Personal preference. And it's tough to grapple with that.
Well, maybe those people are just vegan and you need to throw some vegetables on the smoker.
I could smoke tofu patties. I mean, we can do all that stuff. Vegetables, why not? Just don't be unreasonable about it. And that's what it really comes down to, is the nuisance thing. Right? What's a nuisance? What's a nuisance? Are you just annoyed? Sometimes when we write these letters, I know a lot of attorneys in our office, I've written a few letters, and they like to pull the language from this, because one time I dove deep into the law of nuisances and understanding what it was. Mm-hmm. And there is some great language that we all often cite, and it says, a nuisance is not determined by somebody's unease or annoyance with something. And specifically within HOAs, I believe the language was in either an appellate court case or it might have been a California Supreme Court case, where they say people who live in organized communities must of necessity suffer some inconvenience consequent upon the reasonable use of property by others. What does that mean? If you live in an HOA and you have zero lot lines, you might have some barbecue going on next door and you're going to smell that. Does that mean it's unreasonable? You might have a child that's jumping in a trampoline next door. Is that unreasonable? At 2 a.m. it might be unreasonable, right? But at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, probably
right.
Not.
Right. Probably not unreasonable to hear that during the daytime, but you're correct. After 10 p.m., 2 a.m., parties all night long, shouldn't be expected in a planned community. Shouldn't be expected anywhere, actually.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you're playing, really high volume dance party music like I do at my house often at 1 a.m., that's not unreasonable whatsoever, with 50 speakers in the backyard or something along those lines. But if it gets to 1:30 a.m., at that point we might have to turn it down a little bit.
You're okay as long as you invite every neighbor over.
Every neighbor over, have a party, absolutely.
A little tough.
Pre-COVID times, yeah.
Yes. A little tough today.
Yeah, a little tough today. So that's that's the challenge. When we talk to our clients, like, how do we know what a nuisance is? And of course they get concerned because, hey, we can try to reason with this person who's complaining, but I always tell our clients, it's a tough thing to reason with somebody who's just inherently unreasonable.
Correct. Well, one of the things I try to do when I receive a complaint that is subjective is I try to ask the board members that live in the community, have they experienced this particular behavior? Is there any validity to it? Is this person just exaggerating, or is it a real problem? And most of the time you get feedback that either completely dismisses what was reported or substantiates it, and then you act.
Absolutely.
Based on your violation policy.
Absolutely, right? A dog barking, is that really a problem? But a lot of times we investigate, have there been any other complaints from other people in the, on the street? Because mm-hmm. if this dog's barking all hours of the night, it's not just going to be this one homeowner. There's a bunch of surrounding homeowners that if the dog was a problem, you would expect to receive complaints from them as well, right? And that kind of helps you gauge the magnitude of this. Is this something that the association needs to become involved with?
So dog barking is very common. And the first thing I do when I receive that kind of complaint is I call the person with the dog, and most of the time they're not even aware their dog's barking because they're not home. So it's a simple call and courtesy, not sure, just checking to make sure your animal is well. And that kind of stops them, and they think, well, I didn't even know my dog was barking.
Yeah.
And it's funny how that works out.
Well, it's just surprising because sometimes you make that call and they don't know, and it's an easy thing to fix. And you think, hey, if you're living next door to this person, I guess in this day and age when we're all confined to our cell phones and we don't want to have human interaction, hey, did you ever go knock on your neighbor's door? Mm-hmm. Let them know what's going on?
No,
I'm not gonna do
no
that.
I just text my neighbor.
You just text your neighbor?
Yes.
There you go.
Yes.
There you go.
Well, I wanted to ask you that, Steve. I mean, the association doesn't have to get involved with every single dispute, and most of the time it is neighbor against neighbor. It is a personality conflict, or it is just a fear of going and knocking on the door. Does the association have to get involved in every single nuisance, or do the homeowners themselves have some kind of resource or recourse that they can follow that would encourage them to communicate with each other?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's a good thing. I mean, unfortunately, we're kind of seeing a trend now where people, for, you know, a variety of reasons, I think the country's polarized right now, and I think people are a little bit quick to get venomous when they shouldn't do that. So naturally, they're going to come to the association anytime they don't like their neighbor and say, this is a nuisance. You have to do something about it. And while the association does have a duty to enforce its documents, we have to think at the same time, okay, well, if the association had to respond to every one of these perceived slights or annoyances, right, what would you have to price your management contract at, fielding all that stuff and playing, you know, community peacemaker? How much legal fees would be incurred unnecessarily because somebody was upset about someone's trash cans that were left out a little bit too long, or they were smoking ribs and not tofu patties, right? So we've challenged, you know, our struggle as a law firm has been, okay, is there some type of tool, right, some type of mechanism that we can give our clients that allows them to filter out these complaints that really don't warrant their involvement, that these are things where two neighbors just need to get together and work something out, versus those that might be legitimate, where the association might have a duty to act. And one of the things we like to do, and I know you're a fan of these as well, are these neighbor-to-neighbor dispute resolution policies, right? These are dispute resolution policies, they're operating rules, and it's great. It basically, it's a document that the association drafts with the assistance of its counsel, and when a neighbor-to-neighbor dispute comes before the board, and the board can make the determination if they need to consult with the association's attorney, they do that, and they tell the homeowners, hey, listen, I understand you're concerned about your neighbor's trees falling, or your neighbor's tree leaves falling in your patio, but before the association spends its resources and its money, we're not going to step in until you've shown us that you've made a good faith effort to work directly with your neighbor to try to find a resolution.
I love those policies. Now, sometimes we have to explain to homeowners why they have those policies. And those policies are put in place to create community and form relationships between neighbors, not divides. Right. And it does help a lot.
Yeah, I feel like there are those homeowners who, I feel like they use the association kind of to tattletale on each other. But I feel like there are also those homeowners that they just don't know where else to go or what else to do. I'm experiencing this issue in my home. I have this person that lives next door to me or above me, and it's just not, I can't peacefully enjoy my home. I can't come home from a long day of work and enjoy my space. This is truly bothering me. I don't know what to do. I don't know how to handle it. And I think sometimes these policies do encourage that conversation between the neighbors, do encourage that sense of community, like, hey, just go upstairs and knock on the door. Go talk to them.
It does help. The policy helps. Helps for another reason as well. Management is armed with a tool to use and a procedure and guideline to point to say, dear Mr. Homeowner, this is our process. We don't change it. We act this way according to these guidelines established by your board of directors, who you elect. And it works out very well. Now, my first question when these folks call me is, did you talk to your neighbor? And I know that you're laughing because you only can imagine the responses I get. Well, no, that's your job. You're correct, Ramona. They think I'm there to be the police and I should have a referee whistle and I should be out there policing what's going on in the neighborhood. Mm-hmm. They shouldn't talk to their neighbors. It's an interesting dynamic.
So let me ask you, how many times when you ask that question, hey, did you talk to your neighbor? Did you call your neighbor? On the percentage, like statistically, how often do they say yes versus no?
I'm going to say I'm exaggerating. I would say 10% of them talk to them.
Yeah.
And that's probably an exaggeration. But, you know, maybe I'll make a mindful note to tally going forward, because it's gotten worse since COVID, I've noticed.
Yeah.
That they use that as an excuse for everything. They, I can't go to their door, COVID, I have to be away from them. Well, like I said, I text my neighbor. And I'm not texting them to complain, I'm texting them, I noticed that your sprinklers have been running a very long time. Just want to make sure you're aware. I text them to be neighborly. I don't text them to complain.
Yeah.
Well, I think one of the things that I used to think about when I was managing was, it's a community association. It's community first. And I remember growing up on a cul-de-sac, and it's not the same as an association, but I remember that you knew all of your next-door neighbors, and you went next door and knocked on the door and borrowed a cup of sugar, and you rode your bike in the cul-de-sac, and everybody knew each other. And I feel like in the current day and age, it's a lot of you drive home, you hit the button for the garage door, you pull in, you hit the button behind you, and your only communication with your next door neighbor is to complain about the loud music or the barking dog or whatever else is going on.
And then to go on next door and blast them about those things.
Right.
Because that's what they do.
Right.
Yeah.
It's true.
Right.
Yeah, totally. I call them the keyboard assassins, right? Won't pick up the phone, won't have a face-to-face conversation, but man, will I spew venom typing out this, you know, this next-door comment about this thing, or sending a less than professionally worded email to management or the board of directors about my neighbor's whatever this and whatever that. And the challenge I've seen with some clients, too, is they might get involved and they say, oh yeah, sorry, we'll take care of Tom and his trash cans, and Tom gets sent a letter, and so what does that typically happen, right? Then that sparks kind of a vengeful spirit in Tom. Now all of a sudden Tom's complaining about the neighbor who complained about him, some ticky-tack violation as well, and the board gets kind of trapped. Well, we did it this time, and this is technically a violation too. And that's where we get frustrated as attorneys, because we feel like, yeah, we'll help you with this, but we feel like we're really not adding any value to the community because we're spending time and money on something that is just so meaningless and so juvenile.
I agree.
Well, I think the struggle for the board and for management is, When do I invoke this neighbor-to-neighbor dispute policy, and when do I push back on the homeowner, and when is this a valid association complaint that we need to get involved in?
Today's episode is brought to you by Altera Assessment Recovery. Altera provides comprehensive attorney-supervised assessment collection services to community associations throughout California. Trust us with your collection needs. We'll get the job done, done right, and as quickly and efficiently as possible. Altera Assessment Recovery, we're the collection team you've been looking for.
Yeah, so when you have the neighbor-to-neighbor dispute policy, it's great because you push it back on the homeowners. And in our experience, and you know, it might be different for your end, but in terms of the amount of files that come to our office or matters that come to our office, it drastically reduces them because the homeowner says, "Oh, I have to go through this thing, and I have to show that I try to work it out with my neighbor before the board of directors will even consider helping me out on this." A lot of times, all of a sudden, the issue just goes.
That's right.
Goes
it
away.
Puts a little onus on them,
yes.
And they don't like that. They don't want the burden. They don't want their neighbors to know who turned them in. And it removes them from being able to hide.
Totally. I mean, a lot of times, like, listen, if you wanted the board's volunteers, thankless job, right? Management, I know, it's remarkable how busy you guys are. Before we spend more resources and more time, because homeowner, you're saying that this issue is so paramount to your ability to sleep and your psychological well-being. If that matters that much to you, you're telling us you won't send an email to your neighbor requesting that you guys meet and try to work something out, and if you're unwilling to do that, how can we take your complaint seriously, right? If your property value is going down by hundreds of thousands of dollars and you can't sleep at night, it's not worth an email from you to your neighbor.
I agree with that. It's very difficult to calm someone who's that irrational down, though, in my experience.
Yeah.
So what I do is I try to ask questions and dig a little deeper and see if there's something different that's going on. Something under the surface that they're just not willing to admit at the beginning of the call. And usually you weed out what's real versus what's blown out of proportion.
Exactly.
And point to the policy if you have one. Have a process. So that's what I train the team on at Excel. I tell them, first thing you do, offer solutions, ask questions, gather information. Try to be the first resolution phone call to that person's question. And to answer your question from before about the management contract, the manager isn't burdened with all of those calls because the receptionist or the assistant will take them. And she usually weeds out what's really an issue or what just needs a quick courtesy call or a courtesy notice.
Got it.
And then going forward, it goes to the manager, to the board of directors, and then to the attorney, which is probably where it lands in your lap.
Yeah, and that's, especially when we started working with new communities, the second we get one of those types of matters, we're like, gosh, we don't feel good about stepping in here. The board doesn't need to be, and they're obviously concerned because now everybody threatens a lawsuit, right? Oh, you better do something about Tom's trash can or his falling leaves, otherwise we're going to sue you. And then they get concerned, like, you're going to get threatened with suits all the time. You just have to understand you put a tool in place, right? The code, right? The civil code encourages us to follow our own policies and procedures. So let's adopt a policy, neighbor-to-neighbor dispute resolution policy, and develop that procedure executed through your management team to kind of filter these things out. And the nice thing about that is when you have that really irrational, irate homeowner with that victim mentality where you say, hey, there's a policy, you have to do this, and they say, no, you're just not helping me because of you know, my skin color or because of my political affiliation or whatever the circumstance is, it's a really nice thing for us to say, you know, that's just silly. All we're trying to do is follow the procedure that's been drafted by the association's legal counsel and adopted by your elected leadership, your board of directors. This is what we have to do. So we're not going to hear any of that nonsense. And that's another value that, we're finding in with these policies.
Well, as management, the one response we always get back, or commonly get back, is, well, my trash cans are out, but let me report the other 50 homeowners who have their trash cans out.
Totally.
And we get a laundry list of every violation in the neighborhood. And it just makes our job a lot more difficult and challenging. And because we have a duty to investigate.
Yeah.
As we mentioned before.
Duty to investigate and you have a duty to enforce. But what does that mean? We don't have to sue homeowners for trash can violations. I'll never authorize a suit for a trash can violation. Unless somebody's taking their trash can and dumping it on their neighbor's front lawn or something like that. That's that egregious. At that point, say, yeah, you've got a bad apple here. But we're not going to file lawsuits because someone keeps leaving their trash can. At most, we'll fine them. You know, right? You have these disciplinary tools that are there to do that. But just because they're a violation doesn't mean you have to sue someone. But to Ramona's point, right, when does the association get involved in a neighbor-to-neighbor dispute? Well, I think one, when you can find out that it's not a neighbor-to-neighbor dispute, when you do kind of that back-end diligence, when you find out, actually, no, everybody on the street is complaining about this individual's parking habits or, you know, what they're doing in their yard, these late-night parties and so on and so forth. At that point, it's really not a neighbor-to-neighbor dispute. It's affecting the community broadly. So that's something that's verifiable that the association...
Right.
Needs to get involved in. Some other things, you know, with you know, smoking complaints in particular, we used to treat, years ago, we used to treat those as neighbor-to-neighbor disputes, but the trend of, you know, California and the cases that we've seen, there's at least a duty to investigate there. So when you receive secondhand smoke complaints, a lot of times there might be a little bit more onus on management and on the board to investigate the issue. One of the ways that we typically resolve these secondhand smoke complaints is if we go there and we say, hey, listen, this might be a problem that's unique to these two homeowners and there's really nothing effective, and we've tried them. We've brought experts out to say, yeah, we can try to seal off all the vents, and they don't really do the trick. So what do? We take both parties we offer them to go to mediation. And a lot of times at that point, they realize, yeah, this isn't worth it. I'll just not smoke, you know, in this area, or I'll try to find some resolution or something along those lines. But
so when we receive those complaints, we ask, did you talk to your neighbor about this? And then we place a courtesy call to the person who's the smoker, and we ask them, are you aware that your smoking is bothering your neighbor? And most of the time they say no, and they say, I will walk to the other side of the yard, or I will walk out of the front of the house to an area away from them, because maybe they didn't realize that their smoke is going right up into the neighbor's window.
Absolutely.
It might not have dawned on them.
Yeah.
So sometimes that resolves it before it gets to dispute level. But I agree, the smoking is becoming a bigger issue. People are home more now.
Mm-hmm.
People are probably smoking more now because they're so stressed out. I don't know. But it's becoming a larger issue. And in particular, marijuana has become the hot button topic.
So marijuana smoke in particular?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes. And so the neighbor will say, I have a prescription. I'm legally allowed to smoke it. And you can't say anything about it.
Yeah, that's not necessarily the case, but you know, that's another one of those issues where we kind of get concerned. Most of the times when we get involved in marijuana circumstances is when someone's growing, because the smell of a grow operation is significantly more burdensome on neighboring owners than someone who's smoking. But you know, okay, well, if you have a prescription, then there's vaping, there's different ways that you can consume your medication, right? You don't have to smoke.
No, you don't have to smoke.
But it's just one of those things where you get frustrated because you're like, this is just so silly. You know, you want to take the person's complaint seriously, and you want to do that, and then you try to install some reasonable measures. And as the board of directors, right, they have a duty of inquiry. They have to see what a reasonable resolution is. But I always try to tell our clients, it's an unrealistic expectation to think with this type of individual, anything that you do is going to make them 100% happy. If they want to be entirely left alone and as though they don't have any neighbors, then they need to move to a place where they don't have any neighbors.
That's right.
Right.
On a remote island.
Absolutely.
Without a homeowners association.
Yeah. I live in a stacked condominium and I can hear children playing above me. Well, you know, at that point you might not want to live in a condominium, right? If it's that much of a concern to you.
I say buy on the top floor.
Mm-hmm. Buy on the top floor.
That's right. Yeah.
That's a good one. I haven't heard that one.
If you don't like noise, buy on the top floor. If you don't like smells, probably move out in the middle of nowhere. I don't know. There's no real answer. There's no answer for that.
Yeah.
But you do. You get that. I had a community here in Orange County, and the homeowner wanted me to block off a section of greenbelt that was right next to his home because the kids were walking through that greenbelt when they went to school every morning. You know, and I explained to them, well, everybody owns the greenbelt. It doesn't belong to you just because it's next to you.
Or parking in front of your home when it's a single family home.
Right. Mm-hmm.
That's common where you don't want anyone else parking in front of your home on the street in front of your house.
Right.
Even though you own the driveway in front of your house, not the street.
Oh, yeah.
So it happens
a lot.
I don't
want cars in front of my house. Those are tough people mm-hmm. to deal with. I was working with a client in San Diego County. And the nature of the community, I mean, it's one of those communities where it's high density, but it's a big master plan. And this individual was just on a tirade because they were complaining, you know, every Saturday, my neighbors, they take lawn chairs out in the middle of the street and they're out there, you know, having alcoholic beverages.
You mean they're having fun?
They're having fun.
Isn't there a rule against that?
They're having fun. And, you know, this individual hired an attorney and so on. So we ended up going to mediation. And the funny thing was, is that when all was said and done, this individual was just feeling excluded. And once we started working them into the fold, all of a sudden they became the model neighbor. And it was just this weird circumstance. So that's kind of where it's a challenge for us, especially I think in the HOA thing. You think lawyer, lawyer, lawyer. A lot of times we're counselors. Right? And I know you get this from a management perspective too. You have to understand the psychology of the people that you're dealing with and say, well, listen, what's this complaint is a symptom of something else. What does this person really want? What are they missing? Do they just need to be heard? Do they have feeling like they had a bad experience with the prior board or and they just need to have some trust or some faith rebuilt in those things? But that's where we see a lot of these neighbor-to-neighbor disputes going, especially the silly ones. When they hire an attorney, we'll call the attorney up. What's your client's endgame here? What's going on? I mean, is the trash can that big of an issue? Well, no, it's this with the neighbor, so on and so forth. And then we'll have a conversation. We'll do an IDR and try to smooth the things over, right? But it's not without having to incur legal fees and the board going through the stress of it. And, of course, you know, people get prideful and they want to yell. This person's always complaining about something.
Usually based on a larger personal issue, mm-hmm. from my experience. And you're correct. It requires a high level of emotional intelligence to deal with some of the issues that come across our desks. And you have to care, genuinely care about people and wanting to improve their life and the quality of where they live. And then understanding your purpose. Your purpose is not there to solve or resolve personal disputes. It's really there to work to improve the community.
Absolutely.
And to uphold the board of directors' objectives.
Well, I like one of the things that you have said throughout this whole podcast. You keep bringing it back to community. And, you know, your response every time has been, I ask them questions. And then I call the neighbor. Hey, neighbor, did you know? Oh, my goodness, I didn't know. Right? It's really just about communicating the issue, being neighborly, right? Just building that sense of community because it's a community association. I think that's the thing is I think a lot of times these homeowners, they come in and I live in my HOA. I live behind these secured gates. You're supposed to take care of all these issues for me. It's like, no, this is a community.
That's correct. The perception is that we are there for a different purpose than we are there for. We're not there for those things. We're there to help develop the sense of community,
right.
and maintain the common areas and help the board in guiding decisions. And it's really not that difficult.
No, it shouldn't be. That sense of community, Ramona's, you know, really hammered that theme home with our attorneys because we like to look at these things in black and white as much as we possibly can, read the legal language, read the CC&R, say we could do this, we could do that. It's always nice to take a step back and say, well, yeah, we could do this. Should we do this? Is there a smarter way to do this? Right? Do we need to, you know, go to the mat right away and fire off these nasty letters? Or does this individual just need a phone call to say, hey, by the way, just so you know, the board of directors, this thing's come across my desk. This seems silly. What's going on in your backyard? Because I don't want to have to write this letter and then charge the legal fees, and the board's going to want me to seek reimbursement from you. Can you help me out to understand why this is a problem? And, you know, a lot of times that's an effective way to do it. Of course, you get those individuals, sometimes tenants as well, that say, I don't care what the rules are with the CCA, and those people need to be taught a lesson, so to speak.
The rules don't apply to them. One of the things that we've done to help aid the board with the violation matters is we've tailored the violation correspondence. The first notice is a lot lighter in tone, a little more neighborly. It's not accusatory. It's got a photo. It has a space for a homeowner to write an explanation and tell us, are they going to correct it? Or maybe they just didn't realize their trash can was out for 2 days. Maybe they went on vacation and they just got absent-minded. Who knows? But it gives them a method to communicate back, and we close the matter out.
Yeah.
Then the letters get a little more strongly worded as they go along, because you need that for something when it escalates to the level of true enforcement. Enforcing trash can violations is not what I dreamed of when I grew up.
No, I didn't
think
go
that
to
was
law
going
for
to
that.
Exactly.
Dog poop letters, trash can violations, right?
People are serious about that stuff, though.
Yeah.
The doggy DNA, you have to, you know.
Do you have clients that do the doggy DNA?
I do stuff? Not. I've heard of it. Thank goodness I've never done that. But there are clients, particularly in density housing, where they do that. And the fines are very steep. And they make you register your animal, and you have to have it tested. And they can actually check to see if it's your animal you can pick up from. And maybe in some cases that's warranted.
I don't know.
But I think that if we've gotten to that level as a board of directors, I really think that we need to reassess what our role is, right?
I agree.
I mean, I get it. I think we sometimes get gun shy. It has to be in writing. They're going to sue and they're going to accuse me of saying something that I didn't say. So I'm not going to pick up the phone and call them. I'm not going to send a board member down to knock on their door. It has to be in writing. But I think that we go too far to the other extreme, and now we're sending violation letters for every ticky-tacky thing, and we're just creating this animosity within the community.
Actually, that's true. You're perpetuating it. And there are ways to create community, and there are ways to break it down. And sending letters and being punitive and just harassing someone is not the way to go.
Yeah.
It doesn't lead to success.
Mm-mm. Like what you hear so far? Make sure to subscribe to the Tinnelly Talks podcast at tinnellylaw.com and never miss an episode. This podcast is made possible by listeners like you. Thank you for your support. Now let's get back to the show.
And a community, in the grand scheme of things, when you're out there, there's word of mouth. And we all know about those communities where the board members are particular, and you have the enforcement committee, and you have a community of maybe 100 homes, and 80 of them are in violation. That's telling.
Yes. Mm-hmm. The enforcement committee, the compliance committee, which is usually one or two homeowners that in their formative years, they were the first one to raise their hands to say, yes, I'll be the hall monitor. Absolutely, because they love that little bit of power. I always get scared with those. When clients say, yeah, we have an enforcement, a compliance committee. How does this work? And then we find out some questions. I don't think you really should be having, you know, Barbara drive up and down the street taking pictures of people's open garages. And
as long as she has her badge on. No, I'm kidding. You know, it's true. We joke about it behind the scenes, but it's really not funny, actually. It's kind of sad.
Yeah.
And you're right. It's a little disturbing.
I mean, one of the philosophies that we've had at the firm is that it's not the manager's job to play condo police. Your job is not to drive around and look for violations. Yes, we have to enforce the rules. Not all rules are equal. And I think we need to pick our battles and really decide what protects our property values, what protects that sense of community, and what are things that, you know, really shouldn't be a rule to begin with.
Correct. There is the letter of the law and the intent of the law. And in my experience, you drive by and you might not pick up on every little thing. However, you're going to notice if someone paints their house purple.
Right.
And if they do, we need to write them a notice.
Totally.
And we need to get them in compliance. That's not acceptable.
That's objectively verifiable. We see that. Hey, this guy's got a boat on his front lawn. Totally.
Correct.
Totally. Or this person's cooking odors are constantly bothering me. You know, are we really going to investigate the reason? Is that what this association is here to do, is to shield you from your neighbor's cooking odor? I mean, no. We have a neighbor-to-neighbor dispute resolution policy. Let us know after you've completed the first few steps of the policy and whether the board will consider it. And usually that type of thing just goes away. It's setting the expectations of the people who live here. This isn't a hotel. Right? You didn't check into a hotel where we're your concierge. Oh, yes, we'll bring you up another hot towel. I'm sorry that the vacuum is going off in the hallway. We'll turn that off right away. This is your community. You're living here. Go talk to your neighbor. We're going to go back to making sure that the streets are paved and that the, you know, the park is maintained and that the pool chemistry is right. That's what our job is.
That's true. That is our job. Gives us more purpose and definition to do our job every day.
So if you were going to summarize it as a manager, what do you tell your managers when they get that type of complaint? How do you ask them to handle that?
I ask them to talk to the person, ask questions, verify if it's something that you can see or confirm yourself. So if their complaint is about something that's subjective, that's when they have to dig deeper, because it's personal opinion. And that's where our job is tough there, when it's personal opinion. Because my tolerance level might be different than yours or Steve's.
Yeah.
It's very subjective.
Yep.
Subjective is the part of our job that gets us in trouble. So the judgment call is always be conservative, escalate it up to a supervisor if you're not sure. When you become more experienced in our field, mm-hmm. as you know, mm-hmm. you learn to weed out what's really true versus fact versus fiction.
Right.
And that requires time in the seat doing the job. However, some things you're just never prepared for when people bring complaints to you that are completely from a different realm, you know, where you didn't expect it or anticipate it. And there is no rule book for it. And there's nothing you have in your wheelhouse to give them a response.
Yeah, and sometimes you get kind of the case of the church giggles because you don't really know how to react to what seems like an absolutely ridiculous complaint with this homeowner, and you have no idea how to deal with it. I remember, Ramona, you told me a funny story back in your management life where you had this individual that was complaining about a tree that would just die repeatedly.
Yes. Yeah. The tree died annually.
Well,
and I tried to explain to him, no, sir, the tree is not dying.
It's deciduous.
And I said, it comes back in the spring, right? And he said, yes, but in the fall, you know, it dies. And I'm like, well, it can't die every year. It's deciduous. And he didn't know what deciduous meant. He didn't want to admit that. And
would you call me? I am not a deciduous.
And you know? that was where
I mean. It's like, how do you not laugh?
Right? You do. You get the church giggles. But you have to spend the 10, 20 minutes on the phone. And I promise you, that's the type of tree. It's going to come back. You've explained to me that it comes back every year. It's going dormant in the wintertime.
It's hibernating.
Yes.
Yes. It's,
and he was thrilled when it came back in the spring.
Wow.
Magical tree. Sometimes you have to do it. Yeah, it's a challenge. It absolutely is a challenge. But training them, I mean, it's, you know, our outlook is the same. Understand that there's a community that's involved here. Be rational and be strategic with your enforcement efforts. But the big picture with our boards, at least when things get escalated to us, the majority of the circumstances, we say, just because someone's complaining and threatening to sue you doesn't mean that the association has to do something about
it. That's true.
And in often cases, the association shouldn't do something about it, because once you do that, now you've opened up this can of worms where now this individual is saying, well, here you go, here's 80 pictures that I have of everybody who left their trash cans out. And then now all of a sudden you're just spinning your wheels, and it's not a good thing, right? So it's a teachable moment for us, for our boards of directors, and we like these neighbor dispute resolution policies. But we know it's a challenge. I mean, as lawyers, we can understand the reasoning and the rationale and the end game, but I can't imagine, especially a freshman manager coming in, getting these types of complaints and just wanting to do a good job from a customer service standpoint, but not really knowing how to deal with it.
So it's interesting to watch how managers come into the industry, and when they start to receive that type of phone call and communication. So it goes one of two ways. Either they get the giggles and they think it's hilarious, or they lose all faith in humanity, meaning they think, oh my gosh, I'm glad I don't live in a homeowners association. I've heard that a lot. Or, oh my goodness, I will never buy a condo. I've heard that many times. For me, I try to look at it as if, what would I do if it was my home? How would I feel if I got that letter? And how angry do I have to be to call someone up and complain about someone else? Because I'd have to be pretty angry.
Yeah.
I would go talk to them first. But that's just my mentality. I've always had the mentality.
You know, as a rational human being, that's just your mentality. And I just wish we would have, you know, a lot of times more people like that at the other end of the phone. But like I said, I've been surprised. Just a little bit of this, you do a little bit of digging and you find out there's a bigger problem and you can get to that. And all of a sudden, this individual now turns into the biggest, you know, the neighbor ambassador You know what I mean? You've just totally brightened their day. So there's something that's going on there.
They're the new party planner.
They're the new party planner.
Yes. Of the block. Yes, for sure.
Community social event director.
How many times has your biggest complainer become your best board member?
That has happened a lot.
Many, many times.
Because it's great to have those people who have passion join you on this side of the table where they actually can bring that energy to better the community.
Yeah.
Right. It's great to see it turn around.
Right.
And they see a different perspective. And they realize it's not that cut and dry.
No. And it's not that cut and dry. It's a challenge. And wait a second, this is kind of a thankless job.
It's a thankless job, and they realize they don't get vacations and they don't get paid. So they really have a lot more respect. I try to give them a job, have them join a committee, get them involved in the community, and it works out. 75% of the time, it works out well.
Yeah. Reminds me of my childhood. I was always acting out, and my mom was just so great to find these little activities. No, Stephen, this is a little project that you need to do over here. And all of a sudden, I'd stop getting in trouble because I had some new mission, right? I had some new directive, right? There was all that energy that I needed to harness one way. And we've seen that with our board members, especially committee members. Oh, that seems like the person who's always complaining about the landscape. That's a good person to join the landscape committee. They're obviously really passionate about that. And sometimes when they feel like they've been given that level of respect, all of a sudden they become a more reasonable human being and want to be part of a solution rather than just complaining about, you know, every little perceived problems.
I agree. Including them in the process is the best way to have them embrace the community. Mm-hmm. It's worked out well for me in the past.
And they become great committee members. They become great board members. And to your point, Steve, I think that sometimes our volunteer directors are so afraid of getting sued that they either are too afraid to act or they completely overreact. They don't want to contact the attorney. And so next thing you know, they're either completely blowing up a situation and making it much more difficult than it ever needed to be, or they haven't done anything and now the lawsuit finally came.
Now the lawsuit comes. Yeah, this homeowner sent us pictures of mold and their complaint. They always complain. We just treated that as a neighbor-to-neighbor dispute. No, that's not what you should have done, right? That's not, you know, it shouldn't be one end of the spectrum or the other. There's some mechanisms that you can put in place, but that's, you know, a lot of times I think board members benefit from being able to have this type of a conversation, right? Especially with their attorneys. And it's funny because a lot of times, we don't want to call the quote, the attorney, right? We don't want to call the lawyer, right? The attorney, that's the thing. Well, no, we want to say, no, call Steve, right? Call Sarah, right? Call Vivian, right? We'll have a conversation with you, especially our retainer clients. There's no charge for these types of things, but we have some experience. You've got a ton of experience. A lot of times there's an easier solution to these things rather than saying as, ooh, we're going to either totally ignore it or we're going to take it to the extreme and we need to file a lawsuit against Tom and his trash cans right away, right? There's definitely a middle ground there.
There is definitely a middle ground that can be found, and tapping on the resources is the first step.
Well, and Steve, you mentioned earlier, you mentioned IDR. Just for the people who don't know what IDR is, because we're talking about opening up those lines of communications, can you just kind of explain that a little bit?
Yeah, IDR. So the nice thing about the area of HOA law is that we have a statutes that encourage us to resolve these things non-judicially, which is what we like, because we always say when lawsuits get filed, the guaranteed winners are the attorneys, right? There's, you know, one side's going to lose, and even if you win, you're going to pay attorney's fees, right? The attorneys are going to win, but regardless of whether you win a lawsuit or not, everybody's going to go through the stress and the anxiety associated with it, and it's going to leave a bad taste in your mouth. So anytime, and that's what we kind of pride ourselves on, resolving a dispute at the early stages non-judicially, it's better for everybody. It's better for everybody. That's why we have clients that have been with us for decades, because we keep them out of lawsuits. IDR is one of the processes that we're given to resolve these disputes non-judicially, and it's basically an informal setting. There's no mediator. There's no arbitrator. It's the homeowner and a member of the board, and the code changed a few years ago where if the homeowner wants to have an attorney attend with him or her, they have that option, and the association in that circumstance would have the association's counsel present as well. And you try to find a reasonable resolution to these things, because any attorney that's honest with their client is going to say, hey, as much as this dog barking or trash can or leaves falling situation might be the most serious thing on the face of the earth to you, once we bring this in front of a mediator or a judge, they're not going to look at it that seriously. They're going to say, this is another HOA thing. These people can't get along. What are we fighting over here? And it's going to be a pox on both of your houses. So before we have to escalate it to that point where we're going to be looked at for being absolutely ridiculous, let's try to work this out at the early stages. And usually if you have reasonable people, you can do that. Some of our boards, they get, you know, they get concerned. Oh, this homeowner is bringing an attorney to IDR, and we say that's a good thing because the attorneys are easier to rationalize with, at least in our experience, and they can then communicate that to the client. If it's just the board member and the homeowner, right, there's things. But if we have the benefit of an attorney on the other side, a lot of times that assists in the resolution of things because they're going to have somebody that's in their corner advising them as they should. As much as you think that we should file a lawsuit because the neighbor's tree's leaves are dropping in your pool, let's see if we can find some resolution here. Maybe we can share the cost of them removing the tree and putting something else or so on and so forth. We're not going to spend $50,000 on attorney's fees to solve what could be a $600 problem here. Let's be smart about it.
So in my experience in IDR, the majority of the homeowners are not bringing an attorney at this time.
Great.
However, some of them might not be aware that they're allowed to because of the law change, the statute. Mm-hmm. It changed. And so some of them are aware of the old way it was done, where it was an informal process. It's a little more formal now.
Right.
However, it works out pretty well.
Well, usually. That was the whole idea. Yeah. That was, you know, IDR was one of those pieces of legislation. Mm-hmm. It doesn't happen very often, but it was one of those pieces of legislation that was actually good for the industry because the whole idea was to get the homeowner to sit down with one or two board members over a cup of coffee and talk it out. Right? And I mean, and that's kind of been the theme of this whole conversation today is let's communicate. Let's open up the lines of communication. Let's figure out what the root of the problem is and figure out what we need to do to resolve it. And you can't do that unless you're sitting down talking to each other.
I agree. It has opened up communication tremendously. And it's helped resolve some significant issues. Some of the issues are very small, or at least they seem small to me. But to the homeowner, it's a big deal to them. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And when they talk it out with a board member, maybe it was just a misunderstanding. Mm-hmm. And now they're on the same page. And it's gone. It's dealt with. Before, it would escalate to a lawsuit and give rise to something that shouldn't even be there. Mm-hmm. And it was really very negative for our community. And unfortunate.
Do you have a lot of your clients go through that have IDRs regularly? Do they go through that process?
I'm seeing more of them these days with COVID. And I hate to use COVID as the excuse for everything, but it seems like COVID has brought out a lot more complaints, concerns, disputes. And it's probably because people are frustrated. They're stuck at home. Maybe they don't have their outlet of being able to be out in the real world.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know.
They're anxious about everything that's going on. And yeah.
Can't go to the pool. I can't work out. I can just sit at home, listen to a bunch of divisive news media and get mad about everything I could possibly get mad about, right? And
right.
I feel that. It's been a challenge for us, too.
Yes, it's been extremely challenging, but there's light at the end of the tunnel. This is going to pass, just like everything else will. And, you know, we're never going to be out of the need of helping our clients establish a sense of community and being neighborly. So our job will still be there, no matter what.
More dog poop letters?
COVID or no COVID, it will still be there. Yes,
no COVID,
trash cans or no trash cans?
Trash cans, more dog poop, more smoking ribs or pot or something like that in the backyard.
Yeah. I can't, you know, I know you have to send a photo of the smoker. I don't know. You probably do have a big smoker in your backyard.
What? Oh, it might
not
be, yes.
Kind
of no, a Traeger.
What are you accusing me of here, Tracy? Yeah, no, there is a big, yes, there's definitely a lot. Well, four kids at home, they mow through three racks of ribs in like 5 minutes. So I got to smoke, and then I have to save a little piece for myself and the dog, because we don't even get anything. They especially smoke.
There's no doggy bags at your house?
There's no doggy bags at my house whatsoever.
Yeah, well, if you have all those kids and you've got a good smoker, you're good. You're
yes,
set.
Yes, absolutely. It's perfect.
Hopefully you have a good neighbor that likes it too.
Yes, he does. He does. He absolutely does.
Well, that's our show for today. Thank you all for listening. We'd like to thank Tracy Blankenship for your time and expertise today. Make sure to visit our website at tinleylaw.com if you haven't already, where we break down this episode and link to our blog article addressing neighbor-to-neighbor disputes. Then stay tuned for our next episode.
Thank you.
To share or subscribe to the Tinley Talks podcast, visit us at tinleylaw.com. There you can find links to everything discussed in this episode, locate helpful resources, check out other episodes, and submit questions for future topics. And be sure to tune in next month for our next episode. As always, the views and opinions expressed by the podcast, its presenters and guests do not constitute legal advice. for more information on the topics discussed in today's podcast, please consult with your association's legal counsel. This is Tinnelly Talks, presented by Tinnelly Law Group, your community, your counsel.